It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are at a minute and a half past the hour as we begin another live broadcast on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, headquartered at headonradionetwork.com, where you can click on the chat room tab and jump in, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and be part of the merry, madcap, zany, wacky, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the little confab that takes place in the 3 hours during which this program is live every evening. If you do that, if you pick out that screen name and that password, you will be greeted by none other than Anatole and Laborman and Squeaky and VT Blom, who all arrived early and are moderated capably by midweek utility chat room moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgia Stan. More will be along pleasantly. Yes. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know both streams are hot, up, and running. These things are important to know, because sometimes, you know, the little thing that Jake says sending, and, you know, I'm not. But I am this evening. Hallelujah. Let's see. So, we'll get the evening started in short order. But of course, first, the gentle reminder, as we head toward the weekend, we do so. Yeah, I hate to do this, but it's necessary. Stand by. Enough with the drum loop already. People hate the drum loop. Lassie, it's Bob.
It's a good girl. Oh, it's a good girl, Lassie, yes.
Lassie. Go and tell the sheriff that the Horn and Bob are down the well again. Yeah, we didn't want to be, but well, we are. Lassie, are you there? Wait a minute. You're not Lassie. Oh, no, don't do that. Yeah, the Horn's down the well again. The fundraising goal for this evening, because we've got one, and many kind thanks to our one subscriber for this 24th day of the month. That would be... That would be Jason. Thank you, Jason. Well, I take that back, because we have new subscribers, namely Samuel in Michigan. Thank you very kindly. So that's two subscribers. But at any rate, this is that tough part of the month. Happens like clockwork. And so on the 24th day
of the month. Well, it's a little difficult. You know, we're still looking. One of these days, we'll get it. 400 subscribers, and I'll be done with all this infernal hat passing. But the fundraising goal this evening is $461. $451. It'll be $651 tomorrow evening. Because we're running toward the end of the month and hoping to nudge the Norsky and lick the Lithuanian. And let's see, 22. We'll have 3 days of August left next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Funny how that works. And I've tried every means of making it plain how cheap this all is. I mean, people pay 99 cents for a song that's the same song every time you play it. We try to make about less than 50 cents for 3 hours of original programming every night, and somehow or another it's a challenge. That's not me complaining. As I've said before, I'll be here as long as I'm able. It's just that, you know, we get to that part where the able part begins to be challenged. And we're in one of those places right now. So we need to raise $451 bucks this evening. And I hope we do. You know, the PayPal button is over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And if you want to be a subscriber for the 24th of the month, we can certainly, Jason and Samuel can use the company, believe you me. So, you know, hopefully things will get better. Okay, then. It's 7 minutes past the hour. I'm not going to spend any more time on it than that because it just is what it is. And we'll see how it works out. Never mind. Remember, new subscribers and old subscribers get horn bumper stickers. If I've missed out along the way, let me know, and yeah, I'm going to do a whole bunch of stickers sending this month or this weekend, and then hopefully when the first few subscribers kick in September on the Patreon campaign, they will have their stickers in hand. And thanks very kindly to our buddy Horst for jumping in on the Patreon campaign. None of that, of course, counts toward August fundraising because, well, it's a new campaign and nothing happens until September, well, in that case, September 5th. So we'll have to wait and see. But if you want to participate in that campaign, I think we're down to We're like at 334 people to go in the Patreon campaign. Okay? Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. Alrighty. Thank you, Keith, for getting us started this evening. That takes us to 4:41. Thank you very much indeed. Steve, I just said I'm going to sit down and do a whole passel of stickers this weekend, okay? There's one person doing this here, remember? Bunch of them have gone out. Okay, so where to begin this evening? It's Thorn in the Side Thursday. And Well, we usually focus on, you know, things that make us go, you know, for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thank you, Kay. Thank you very kindly. That takes us down to 400 to go. Thank you, Kay. You know, I do try to publicly thank everybody who supports the program. You get a shout out on it because, you know, I'd rather that strikes me as, you know, that lets the community know that there are real people behind how this stays on the air. And it beats the hell out of commercials, doesn't it? Not that we've got a sales staff or could have a sales staff, but wouldn't you rather hear about your friends, your fellow community members who keep this going, than being asked to buy some herbal capsule that'll give you a stiffy? I mean, really? How many times can you hear the advertisement for that company that sells wood flooring that's probably sleazily harvested out of some rainforest somewhere before? I mean, it's like that ad that runs. I mean, I've mentioned that we're going to have a horn in New York City in February, and I'm getting some interest in that, and that's good. I'm excited about it. But one of the things I want to do in New York City is I want to go to Times Square. I've been there before. But I want to go to Times Square now, and I want to find that place in the middle of fucking traffic where that poor woman goes and sits down on a sofa and starts texting her therapist. I mean, maybe whoever came up with that, okay, it was cute once, but it's just annoying as the thousandth time you've seen it. And you begin to feel open hostility. Oh, maybe I need to be paying somebody $35 a month to be able to text questions to a therapist. I don't know. But you begin to feel open hostility toward those companies. Hey. So I just want to go. I want to go, and I, you know, some people sightsee in New York. They want to see the Statue of Liberty. Some people want to go to the Met. Some people, you know, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice. I want to see where the woman sits down. I just don't understand how they got a couch. How does it just stay there in the middle of Times Square? That's what I want to know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just kidding. I'm not kidding about the Hornet, though. I contacted Pterodactyl. Of RepublicanDirtyTricks.com, and she's gonna. She said she's down for it, and we'll find an appropriate venue somewhere in Manhattan. Should be a good time. Well, okay, all right, okay. Somebody's always got to be the contrarian. Brother Deacon Asa says, we want to hear about fortified beet capsules, Bob. What's the matter with you? Go to bobsbeets.com. Oh, it reminds me of, there was this butcher shop down where I grew up. Pete's Country Meats. They're still there, I think. Made great sausage and stuff like that, but early on, when they were first getting started, one of their early radio ads, their slogan was, "Nobody beats Pete's meat." Didn't last long, but, well, obviously it's lasted in my memory. And so it was good. It was good for a laugh as we were driving home. I saw their billboard and I pointed it out to Agnes, and I said, "Hey, honey, nobody beats Pete's meat." And I got the Laura Petrie. "Oh, Bob." Low humor. What do you want? But it is. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday here. We've got several options. You know, we've had a lot of anthropology. In the first three days of the week. Oh, yay. Thank you, Pamela. In Washington, thank you very kindly. New subscriber. That's a magic number, 333, that we're down to. That's half of 666. Ooh. Yeah. So, by the way, Scott points out, Times Square lady on the couch. On the annoyance scale, how does that commercial compare with the 877-KARS for KIDS spot? Whenever it pops up on my radio or streaming device, I'm reminded of what the innermost circle of hell will be like. Yeah, maybe this trip to New York, I'll get to see the Statue of Liberty. I don't know. There's a picture of Sparky. Under the Statue of Liberty. Not under the, but you get the idea. No. If he was under the Statue of Liberty, it'd be crushing, but no. There's a picture of Sparky with the Statue of Liberty. Cool, Sparky. Cool. Okay, I'm going to get the program going yet, one way or another. Hell or high water. Because I got one idea, and I don't know, maybe you've got others. But because this has a West Virginia angle to it, I can't resist. Yes, I'll warn you in advance that this is a story about Trump and Russia. That's usually good for 5 or 6 emails telling me that there's nothing to it. That it's all just a distraction, and Bernie would have won, and a couple of shrieks about the DNC and how, you know, Poot is a friend, a humanitarian friend of mankind, and how he would never order the murders of God knows how many people whose, you know, murders he's ordered. But this one's kind of irresistible because it's got a sort of a mysterious quality to it. It has to do with the deputy chief of staff for Geezer Discustis's presidential campaign, a guy by the name of Rick Dearborn. The Trump campaign had to give up about 20, turn over about 20,000 emails. But her emails, warp. And various journalism organizations have been sifting through them. And they ran across one from June of 2016 in which Rick Dearborn Rick Dearborn sent an email to Trump campaign staff and said that someone was trying to set up a meeting between aides to the Tangerine Tiberius and none other than hero of the working man, friend of humanity, humanitarian on a level with, you know, Mother freaking Teresa, Vladimir Putin. Mm-hmm. Now, the email doesn't specifically name who the person trying to set up the meeting was. But you should probably remember, take note that along the way, Rick Dearborn also had a hand in setting up the April 2016 address that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini gave at the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, D.C., where Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak just happened to have a little sit-down tete-a-tete with very early Donald Trump supporter and now Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, a man of impeccable integrity. Except, you know, when he's selling out to the Russians. here's the punchline. Here's the kicker. Or what Mark Twain used to refer to as the snapper. The person in the email from Rick Dearborn who was trying to set up a meeting between Trump aides and Pooty Poot himself is referred to in the email only as WV. Yeah, I know. It seems like with whether it's the eternal search to discover the source, the bubbling wellspring of love for Donald Trump, or discerning the turmoil that yields the economic anxiety that led people who to vote for Trump, whom he has no intention of helping, to the reasons for gutting the regulations promulgated legally and properly by the Environmental Protection Agency. There's something about the Trump campaign that just keeps looping back to West Virginia. In this case, WV trying to set up a little get together with Pooty Poot and some Trump aides. Who could that possibly be? I mean, West Virginia, really? Cletus up the holler has contacts with, you know, Pooty Poot? It's kind of hard to, I mean, surely to God, I mean, finally, I mean, this foolishness has simply, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, I don't think I mentioned it, has simply got to end. My God. Can't we see that the poor little Klansmen and neo-Nazis and racists and xenophobes and bigots and homophobes, can't we see that they're really suffering? They're just suffering in their endless agonizing whiteness out there. My God, pay attention to the real issues, why don't you? Who cares if the Russians bought out the Trump campaign and are trying to ruin what might be left of any attempt we ever may make again to have an unrigged election? Who cares about that stuff? I mean, what about the poor little snowflake Trump? What about the maggots? The Make America Great Again Trumpansy scum. What about the maggots? And anyway, there's no way anybody, Joe Manchin doesn't have that kind of power. I mean, Joe Manchin would gladly shiv his own grandmother for a dollar or a political advantage. But even the Russians, I mean, that's too far for Joe Manchin. And goddamn, Shelley Moore Capito, well, you know, that poor thing doesn't have sense enough to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. And then there's Looney Mooney and Evan Jenkins, who can't quite figure out where his constituency is, and you know, that guy McKinley up in the northern part of the state. I mean, Jesus Christ, wait a minute. There's somebody else. Who do Russian oligarch billionaires like to play with? Answer, other billionaires. Okay, so maybe we'd better look to West Virginia's billionaires and see if we can sort out which billionaire in West Virginia might be the WV referred to in those emails. Because we've got, we're just swimming in billionaires here in West Virginia. California, eat your freaking heart out. Texas, blow me. We got us some billionaires in, no. We've got billionaire in West Virginia. We only got one, just one poor little lonesome billionaire. Poor little fella. He's sick. He just got back from like Johns Hopkins or somewhere, being treated in the hospital for some viral infection. And he loves West Virginia. He puts on a golf tournament for us every year. I mean, he bought the Greenbrier Hotel and resort and restored it, all out of the kindness of his heart. All you got to do is ask Jim Justice and he'll tell you. And he'll explain it to you with a story. And he'll say, well, one time I asked the good Lord why it was he made me so rich. And the Lord said, Jim Justice, I made you Jim Justice and not Kunta Kinte so you could do some good in this world. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do good for everybody in West Virginia. You know, except the ones who use water and breathe air. Because what I'm really trying to do is do good for my coal companies. Yeah, coal companies. But it couldn't be Jim Justice. I mean, sure, he's a billionaire. Why would he have any connections to sleazy, skeevy Russian billionaires who might have the ear of noted humanitarian and friend of small fuzzy animals, Vladimir Putin? Oh, wait. Huh. Yeah, there's that. There's definitely that. Because, see, a few years ago, some Russians came to West Virginia. Back when coal was extreme, it was in one of its boom phases. You know, coal is either boom or bust. And Jim Justice had him a bunch of coal mines, and one of them one of his coal companies is called Bluestone Coal. And back when coal was in one of its boom phases, some Russians came to him and said, Jim Justice,
We would like to buy from you your Bluestone Coal Company. How would you like to sell to us Bluestone Coal Company?
And Jim Justice looked at the price of coal and said, well, how much you fellers figuring you axing? What you offer, boys? Because he comes across that way, Jim does. He comes across as, well, the best approximation, the best estimate is Mr. Haney from Green Acres without the lovableness.
Mr. Petrov Ivanovich?
Yeah.
And so they said, no, we would, these are coal mines. It cannot possibly, you know, we would like, we have company. We have company. We call it Mechel. M-A-C-H-A-L. In your pagan alphabet. Mechel. And our company, Mechel, would like to buy from you your Bluestone Coal Company for $568 million of your dollars. Would you like to sell your Bluestone Coal Company to us, Jim Justice?
Jim Justice kind of kicked at the dirt with his toes and sat there and acted like he was chewing on a hayseed. Well, shit, fellers, I don't know. I mean, that Bluestone Coal Company's been in $568 million, Jim Justice. Is not how you say chicken feet. No, it ain't chicken feet. Well, all right. Now, I want you to know I'm doing you fellers a solid. I'm taking a big whooping on this. I'm gonna sell you Bluestone Coal, and I mean that is some fine coal reserves. I mean, we done some mountaintop removal down there. We done poisoned entire communities, and now you can do it. When's the last time you got to legally poison some Americans?
Well, let's not talk about poisoning, please. Not now. We are friends, no?
And so they did the deal. And so he sells them Bluestone Coal. The Russians come in here. The bottom falls out of the coal market. And all of a sudden, Mr. Haney, I mean Justice, drives his truck back up to Mechel headquarters and says, "Hey, Fowlers. I noticed you're having some problems with your Bluestone Coal there. Terrible thing about the price of that. I had no idea the bottom was going to fall out of the coal market. I mean, usually coal just goes up and up and up and up. I mean, coal's West Virginia. West Virginia's coal. I couldn't have possibly known how bad it was going to get under that Kenyan muslin over there that we got in our White House. I'm terrible sorry about that. But if I was you, at Hillary, she's probably going to be president. And it ain't going to get no better for coal. So I tell you what I'll do. I'll take Bluestone Coal back off your hands, and I'll give you $5 million. I will. At which point, the oligarchs...
Hey, it seems reasonable of you. It's probably not worth $5 million. What do you say? Really? You got the phone call from on the big phone? Says sell back? Okay, you have deal. And besides, this time maybe it is chicken feet.
Yeah, that's right. $5 million is chicken feet, boys. And so they did the deal. Now, all of this is taking place the Mechel deal. That takes place in 2015. I mean, I'm sorry, it takes place in 2009. By 2015, he makes the deal to buy Bluestone Coal back for $5 million bucks. And then he reopens the mine, several of them, and puts 200 miners on the payroll. And the next thing you know, he's decided he's a populist Democrat, changes his registration, and begins to run for governor. Because back then it looked like Hillary would probably be the president of the United States. Meanwhile, though, he loves him some golf. He was a college golfer down there at Marshall University. And Trump loves him some golf. And they're buddies. And so the buyback happens in 2015. And lo and behold, in 2016, after swanning around and soireeing with Ivan and Pyotr and Nikolai and whomever, he's got himself a good friendly relationship. And while he realizes that in 2016 that Hillary, April 2016, it's clear that by then that Hillary's going to be the Democratic nominee, and looks even clearer that she's going to wind up being the president of the United States, because the country seems hell bent on nominating on the Republican side Donnie John Trump. And his merry band of hard heads and dead enders and neo-Nazis and fascists and Klan sympathizers. Well, he decides to hedge his bets a little bit. Because, by God, I mean, Hillary's done said she's going to kill coal. But if there was just some way, to keep her from being president and getting Donald Trump as the president, then big things could happen for coal. Big things. And there's a Rolodex. And some calls are made. Because, I mean, Donald Trump's chances of beating Hillary are pretty well not good. And if there's anybody on earth who could even the odds a little bit, it might be them boys over there in Russia, because they got lots of tools, and they might be able to finagle things around to where Donald Trump could actually get elected. And they seem awful interested in the Trump campaign. I can't figure out quite why, but there. Now, none of these articles say that it's Jim Justice. But like I said, there's only one billionaire. There's only one guy who would have significant contacts to the kind of oligarchic power that has the ear of noted humanitarian and lover of birds and beetles, Vladimir Pooty Poot Putin. There can be only one. So, if nothing else, it's another interesting, It's another interesting scene. In this ongoing adventure. Now, on the other hand, after the story was reported, It would only be fair to note that late last night, when the story broke, well, the first thing out of the gate this morning, a spokesperson for good old Jim Justice, who just loves West Virginia is all, he said, I am not the person from West Virginia who allegedly tried to broker a deal in June 2016 between Donald Trump's campaign and Russian President Vladimir Putin. I just ain't. Butch Antolini, who is Jim Justice's spokescreep, said he absolutely is not. Thing is, though, there's beyond the denial, there's nothing in the way of proof. Yeah. The West Virginia Democratic Party, which has, you know, about an entire chicken farm's worth of eggs on its face for ever believing the idea that Jim Justice was a Democrat. God damn, that is still a knee slapper. Jim Justice, Democrat. Oh man, he must have seen the chair of the West Virginia Democratic Party coming from a mile away. Her name's Belinda Biafori, and if I was anywhere near her, I would immediately begin trying to sell her, bridges and statues and lakefront property in the Sahara Desert. Oh, you're gonna love it, Belinda. Really? Riley Moore is a member of the West Virginia House of Delegates. He has also been mentioned as a possible point of contact. He wrote an email and he said, "No, I'm not the WV Kremlin contact mentioned in the CNN story. I find it particularly sad to see the state Democratic chair dealing in fake news in an attempt to cling to relevancy in public discourse after the humbling election experience in 2016. That said, I can understand why Chairwoman Belinda Biafori is grasping at straws with a release like this after working to elect the first Republican governor in decades." Ooh, that stings. She still hasn't resigned. She really should. So, There's your interesting mystery for the evening. At least Riley Moore said it was not him. He did not send the email. Jim Justice, on the other hand, sent somebody else out to say, "No, it wasn't Jim." I mean, Jim done a shit ton of business with me. He suckered him real good, didn't he? I tell you what. But no, it wasn't him. Brother Deacon Asa reminds us, speaking of noted humanitarian and lover of all fuzzy animals, Pootie Poot, he just knocked off another nuisance in the last few hours. No joke. The Russian ambassador to Sudan is dead. It has not been determined yet whether he committed suicide or was shot trying to escape. That's from Casablanca. Mirgias Shirinsky is pining for the fjords now. He was found dead in the swimming pool there at his ambassadorial residence in Khartoum. Since November the 8th, He is the sixth high-ranking Russian diplomat to be found curiously dead. No cause of death has been released. I'm sure he was probably just slicing up some sushi there in Khartoum. And sushi knives are notoriously sharp. And he probably slipped and fell on his sushi knife 37 times and then tripped over a lounge chair and fell in the pool. Mm-hmm. Go figure. Michael in Madison with a note. Subject line, loyal justice. Are you trying to imply that former Republican turned Democrat for 2 years and then recently Republican again would be disloyal to his own country? Well, heck no, Michael. I mean, silly thing. Who would imply such a thing? A man who would stab the voters in the back who put him in office. I mean, he'd never, like, you know, try to participate in giving, you know, a candidate an edge up by arranging for it. No, hell no, of course not. Kind of makes you wonder about that viral infection over there that he was treated in the hospital for, though. Most of us, we go to the doctor, they say, yeah, you got a virus. You see, you got anything you can give me, doc? Nah, it's got to run its course. But good old Jim spends a couple of days over in Johns Hopkins. It's 14 minutes before the hour. If I continue down this paranoid road, pretty soon I'll start sounding like Alex Jones and hollering false flag. You know what? You know what you need? You need some powdered chicken bone broth chocolate energy drink mix. We sell it here at the Horn. It tastes like absolute shit. But you know what? It's what keeps us going here. I mean, we only make $50 million a year. Yeah, right? $50 million a year. We may be broke. But I tell you what, I'm not hustling crushed up, rotten, paleo, chicken, chocolate-flavored broth mix. Yeah. So we got that going for us. And we're down to, you know, we're down to $401 to go, fundraising-wise, and that's awesome. If we put the dollar in the, if we put the dollar toward winterizing the pool, the Olympic-sized swimming pool here at the Horn, fabulous Horn Estate, then that's one at 400, two at 200, four at 100, eight at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 12.50, 64 at 6 1/4, or $128 at $3.13, and we'll take that half a penny and we'll put that on the, in the winterization fund too. Now, all that business about who the West Virginia billionaire might be, that's just pure speculation at this point. This part isn't. If you happen to listen to last night's program, you know that we had a detailed discussion with Dr. Michael Phillips about Confederate monuments and why they have to come down, or why they need to, or better yet, maybe why they need to not be in spaces of public veneration, but should be in a better place like a museum where they can be accurately and historically interpreted for why they were erected in the first place. Well, the Associated Press has a story.
Jim Justice has said, hell no. He won't. He ain't going to act on people saying that they need to take that. He needs to take down that statue of General Thomas J. Stonewall Jackson that stands on the Capitol grounds in Charleston, West Virginia. He had him a press conference, and he said that what happened there in Charlottesville was despicable. And he's sympathetic to people who find the notion that having monuments to goddamn filthy, treasonous, racist sons of bitches on state government grounds, he understands, he's sympathetic to them. But he also said, you know, it's a complex situation. And if we take down Stonewall Jackson, somebody else liable to want us to take down some other statue, too. I mean, there's a statue over there next to the parking lot in between the Capitol building itself and some of the administrative offices. There's a big old statue over there. Got a statue of a sailor from World War II and a Marine from World War II and a soldier from World War II. And it's got all the names of everybody from West Virginia what died in World War II. And if you take down the Stonewall Jackson, if you take down a Stonewall Jackson statue, some goddamn liberal's going to come along and say, well, we got to take down the memorial to all the people who died fighting fascism for this country. And ain't nobody wants that. He's a billionaire. Mainly, you know, because he earned it the old-fashioned way. He inherited it. But if you listened even half-heartedly to the conversation with Dr. Phillips last night, you know that that is a great, big, giant, screaming, bogus bullshit argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what other statues on the grounds at the state capitol? There's a rather lovely statue, and it sits out in front of the Capitol, and it's called, I think, Lincoln Walks at Midnight. I've spent a good bit of time standing and just looking at it, because, you know, no Abraham Lincoln, no West Virginia. George Washington may be deemed the father of our country, but Abraham Lincoln really is literally the father of West Virginia. Because he's the one, and remember, he was a lawyer and a good one. He made a shit ton of money as a railroad company lawyer before he ever ran for president. And it's only with his legal determination and his willingness to sign the act into law that West Virginia enters the Union as a Union state, not a border state, not neutral, a Union state on June the 20th, 1863. It's always easy for me to remember how old my state is because all I have to do is add 100 to my age. I was born in the 100th year anniversary of the state of West Virginia. And apparently Jim Justice thinks that somebody will want to take down Lincoln's statue or the World War II veteran statues if we take down a statue of a guy who was crazier than a sprayed roach. No, I mean, he was. Long before he was ever a Civil War general, he was a teacher at the Virginia Military Institute there in Lexington, Virginia.
He taught, you know, artillery. And there is there's historical documentation. Well, one, he was a hardcore Christian fanatic. He also liked to suck on lemons. But the little but the young cadets there at VMI, and we're talking, and you know, it's a college now, so nobody goes there until they're like 18 or so. But back then, you might enter VMI at 12 or 13 or 14. His idea of teaching was to stand in front of the class and repeat rote, R-O-T-E, not W-R-O-T-E, rote texts that he had memorized. And that's all he did. No explanation, no analysis, no nothing. Probably because he didn't actually know the material himself. That's often the way it is with bad professors. Oh, you got to show up for class or you won't understand the material. And then sits there and reads out of the book. Well, he wasn't going to read out of the book. He wanted to seem authoritative and authoritarian, as his performance in the Civil War would later bear out. So he memorized the texts and declaimed them at his poor students. And God forbid one of them should raise his hand and ask for clarification, because then Thomas J. Jackson, who was merely known as Thomas J. Jackson then and not Stonewall because the war hadn't happened, Thomas J. Jackson would then berate the boy, for he was a boy. He would then berate the boy for being insubordinate by simply trying to learn what his professor was talking about. This is a shithead. Now, granted, he's a shithead with a horrible, horrible past. His daddy died very early in life, in Jackson's life. His mother tries to remarry, eventually marries a guy here in my county who hated her children with a purple passion, so the kids get farmed out to relatives. Young Thomas can't get along with one relative and writes a letter to another one and says, "I'm done. I've walked out on him." And because they were proper, you know, white privileged property owners, the relatives, they manage eventually to get him an appointment to the United States Military Academy. And he serves as an officer of artillery, in the Mexican War. But there was never any soul searching, the kind of stuff that you see in the ruminations of old Marse Bobby Lee. There was never any, no, he was eager. He was eager to fight on the Confederate side because he believed in the cause. Lexington, Virginia is maybe 50, 75 miles tops from a little place called Sam Black Church, West Virginia. It would have been Virginia then. Sam Black was an ancestor of mine. And he was a circuit rider. So odds are, and he rode all over Virginia. As I've said before, Sam Black could smell a chicken frying from 50 miles distance. Preachers are like that. They, you know, they like to eat free. And so the chances are that Thomas J. Jackson had heard the many fire and brimstone sermons preached by my ancestor, Sam Black. Irony.
on the topic that God ordained the enslavement of black people for their own good, and that slavery, bond slavery in the United States, that vile and hateful institution, was in fact, as was said by some others, including John C. Calhoun previously, not only tolerable, but a positive good for the South. Sam Black was hunted during the Civil War by Union soldiers. His church is known as Sam Black MES Church. Sam Black Methodist Episcopal South Church. And he only agreed to have the name of his name on the church as long as that South was included in the name. And so, being being religiously insane, Stonewall Jackson went into the war eager to defend the cause of slavery. He's not one of those that there can be any middle ground about. You know, he was born in or near Clarksburg of what is now West Virginia, so he is a native son. But I'm pretty sure that even though he was a native son of, what, Austria? I'm pretty sure there aren't any statues to Hitler in Austria because he was a native son. Native son just don't go that far. But Jim just is afraid that it would cause other people to want other statues to come down. Well, it would be a start. Maybe it would be a reason to take down other statues of other Confederates in West Virginia. But then again, Jim Justice is the governor of what, by at least one metric, is the single most racist state in the Union. Hard to believe, I know. But, yeah, perhaps more racist than Alabama, more racist than Louisiana, more racist than Mississippi, West Virginia. This Christian, of course, in a state of war, Thomas Jackson, when he was told about the valor of the Union soldiers opposing him, replied, "Kill them. Kill them all." Mm-hmm. So, that pretty much takes care of the filibobster for this evening. There's other news. Harvey is out there. And in this instance, Harvey is not a 6-foot-tall invisible rabbit. And Elwood P. Dowd is nowhere to be seen. The lovable eccentric Elwood P. Dowd. Harvey started out as a tropical depression, but that tropical depression formed in some of the warmest waters on Earth under any conditions, and given global climate change, some of the warmest waters on Earth now even warmer. And what was thought to have been it might have been just a tropical storm. Nope. By the time this thing hits the Texas Gulf Coast, it's going to be a Cat 3. Who knows? It might even cycle up to a Cat 4.
And we know what horrors these storms can cause. And my heart goes out to anybody who is in its path. We might, however, want to talk for a moment about whether or not those states, and it looks like Louisiana, poor Louisiana, and Texas are going to take it on the chin with this, both of which are the home of noted climate change deniers, and also the home of rock-ribbed conservatives, might want to rethink that. I'm going to say this before the storm hits, and so that I won't be accused after the storm hits of trying to politicize a tragedy. This might be a good time for them to consider whether they really, really, really believe in small, limited federal government. Because you're going to need those tens of millions of federal dollars when it comes time to clean up after this mess. In fact, what's his name? Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, has already declared a state of emergency. This, of course, will allow him to leverage what? That's right, federal money to clean up after what will probably be a devastating storm. Now, a true believer in small, limited federal government would not have done that and would not have his hand out waiting for a big government money check as soon as the storm passes. And this sucker's liable to hit land and just park. I mean, we're talking about 12 to 20 inches of rain in a day for the Houston area. And if the tide and if landfall coincides with high tide, Katie, bar the door. So we might want to talk about that. Y'all really want to be small government conservatives with a hurricane? But see, they won't be small government conservatives. They'll be. You know, it'll just be another case of people in the Confederacy with their hand out for more money from people in California and Oregon and Washington and New York and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts and Minnesota and right. They don't like the union until they need the union. That's the plain lesson of hypocrisy from Southern conservatism. So let's work on knocking down that $400 fundraising goal, please. And we'll take a little break. If you want to engage in conversation, I welcome you, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. And we always do. We'll have a Jim Dandy little conversation, because this is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Green News Report on the way, too. Somebody you know is in it this evening.
'Twas in another lifetime, one of toil and blood, when blackness was a virtue and the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel like death and men who are fighting to stay warm, come in, she said, I'll give you
shelter from the storm.
Not a word was spoke between us. There was little risk involved. Everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place where it is always safe and warm. Come in and I will give you shelter from the storm. You were burned out from exhaustion.
I turned around and she was standing there with silver bracelets on her wrists and flowers in her hair. She walked up to me gracefully, took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Now there's a wall between us, something has been lost.
Walks on hard nails, the preacher rides a mount, but nothing really matters much. It's doom alone that counts. The one-eyed undertaker blows his funeral horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I've heard newborn babies wailing like a mourning dove, and old men with their broken teeth stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? It's hopeless and forlorn. Come in, she says, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
In a little hilltop village, they gamble for your clothes. You bargain for salvation, and they give you a lethal dose. You offer up your innocence and get repaid with scorn. Come in, I will give you shelter from the storm.
Now I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound across the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge. Someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the hands of time to when you and God were born, I know that I could give you shelter from the storm. Come in and I will give you shelter from the storm.
It's Thursday, August 24, 2017.
It's sort of like home on the range, where never is heard a discouraging word, and the coal dust isn't toxic all day.
Trump administration halts study on health impacts of mountaintop removal coal mining. New Orleans still grappling with flood emergency as potential hurricane brews in the Gulf of Mexico. Volkswagen is bringing back the iconic minibus, and this time it's electric. Plus, California again proves Trump wrong. Climate regulations actually boost economic growth.
Shocking. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have become an energy exporter for the first time ever just recently.
That's true. If by recently he means May of 2011. Thanks, Obama. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, trouble in New Orleans with a hurricane heading its way?
Yeah, kind of. As we go to air, the National Hurricane Center is warning that a new storm, Harvey, is now brewing in the Gulf of Mexico and could drop insane amounts of rain on both Texas and Louisiana. And that's really bad news for the city of New Orleans, which has been in a state of emergency since an early August storm dumped nearly a foot of rain in just 4 hours, causing widespread flooding and forcing city officials to admit that some of the city's pumps have been offline for repairs during peak hurricane season.
Uh-oh.
Yep, now the New Orleans Advocate reports that city officials may evacuate the city if it is forecast to receive more than a foot of rain in a 24-hour period. And by the way, next week is the 12th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
Oh boy.
Meanwhile,
scientists are warning the administration's latest move may hurt more than help coal country.
The Trump administration's Interior Department has ordered the National Academies of Sciences to stop work on a study of the health impacts of mountaintop removal coal mining. Mountaintop removal coal mining is exactly like it sounds. It's a method that literally blasts off the tops of mountains, dumping the debris into valleys and streams below where people live. Numerous previous studies have linked mountaintop removal in West Virginia to elevated rates of cancer, heart disease, and birth defects. So state officials requested a federal assessment. Bob Kincaid, founder of West Virginia's Coal River Mountain Watch, in an interview on the broadcast, said the administration's decision to halt this health study shields the coal industry.
They were going to say that there does appear to be a scientific reason to be concerned about the harm that mountaintop removal coal extraction does to people who live near it. And that would have created a controversy and a storm that the coal industry could not have weathered.
Weird. So Donald Trump's claims about how much he loves coal miners is actually not true, because this study might have found that coal mining was killing coal miners and their families. Go figure.
And even worse than that, last week the Environmental Protection Agency announced that it will revoke an Obama-era rule that required operators of coal-fired power plants to limit toxic metals in their wastewater discharge. It seems like this administration really does not want to find out the impacts of coal pollution.
Drink up, coal miners.
But some good news. California's state economy is booming, even as the state has rolled out a host of new regulations to curb carbon emissions and fight climate change.
What?
According to a new report, after implementation of California's landmark cap-and-trade law, statewide per capita emissions fell by 12%. And at the same time, the state's per capita GDP grew at double the national average. For every one fossil fuel job, the state now has 8 renewable energy jobs. And since the launch of cap and trade, California now leads the nation in the number of clean energy patents and is now the most energy productive economy in the world, meaning it uses the least amount of energy for every dollar of economic activity.
So when Donald Trump told us in Phoenix that the Paris Climate Accord would kill jobs, California made him a liar yet again?
Yes, it did.
Not hard to do.
Finally, it's official. German carmaker Volkswagen, while trying to redeem itself after being caught cheating on pollution standards in the U.S. and Europe, announced this week it is bringing back its iconic Volkswagen minibus in 2022. Only this time, that minibus will be all electric.
Cool. How about an electric bug? Where's that?
Hopefully coming soon.
Still waiting on you, Volkswagen. For much more on all of these stories and the many we couldn't get to today, Check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Beep, 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 yeah! Beep, 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 yeah!
And it's 20 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 24th of August, 2017. Steve is asking me, the New York thing, what's the deal? Okay, well, you know, I mentioned it on one program. I should probably mention it on more than one. It's just that it's a long way off. I'm going to be in mid-February. Agnes and I are going to New York. Trying to make up for a little bit of... the things that we did not do while we were busy raising youngins. And we're going to have a sort of a free-ish day. We don't know what that day is going to be. Might be Friday, might be Saturday, might be Sunday. Depends on folks. And so, you know, I just said, you know, hey, if you live in the New York area or whatever, we'll have a horn in. You know, we'll just get together, have a beer. Well, y'all will have a beer. I'll probably have like an O'Doul's or something. Or, you know, a glass of water with a lime in it and a little tiny little dot of bitters to make it look like... No, I'm kidding. But anyway, just, you know, just get together. Just hang out. Just, you know, just see folks and say hi and howdy and how are you and stuff. And that's all there is to it. But, you know, again, that's mid-February. And it's a long, 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 very long way off. So that's it. But you know, might be fun to, you know, just get together and sit down, hang out, and horn in, right? Okay. So I mean, that's what it is. It's not a particularly organized event, I guess is what I'm saying. If we were going to have a, you know, some sort of nationwide horn in, probably having it on one extreme coast or the other would be a terrible idea. So lines are open if you want to engage in conversation. Reminder coming from Laurel. Regarding Harvey, which of course Desi mentioned there. By the way, Marty noting Bob Kincaid. Do you know that guy? Yeah, you should get him on your show. I hear he's almost impossible to reach. Laurel says, let's not forget, Katrina went from a Cat 3 to a Cat 5 in just 9 hours. I actually thought about that, and I hope to God it doesn't. We don't need that. And so, given where it's pointed, we won't be able to evacuate people to the Houston Astrodome so that Babs Bush can say that she's afraid that all the black people are going to enjoy Houston so much that they'll just stay. You might recall when she said that in the aftermath of Katrina. Hit and miss, bit of this, bit of that. The oldest woman in New Jersey passed away. A month after she turned 112, Agnes Fenton passed away at home, where her caretakers were taking care of her. 7 years ago, when she was 105, they had her on a TV show. And as is the case with anyone who crosses the century mark, the question was asked of her, to what do you attribute your long life? Agnes Fenton replied that for decades, she had been drinking 3 Miller High Life beers and having a little pop of Johnny Walker Blue Scotch every day. And that was 7 years ago. sometime shortly thereafter, her caretakers, took away her Miller High Lifes and her little blast of scotch. And you'll forgive me for if this rubs you the wrong way. I don't mean to. I mean, it's just me saying what I think. It was a shitty thing to do. If you've been drinking three beers a day and having a little nip of scotch for decades means more than 20 years, and given the fact that she was 105 when she said it, I'm guessing it was probably more like 50 or 60 or maybe 70. You know, there's not a lot to do when you're 105. And I'm guessing she wasn't becoming unmanageable. I don't know. Maybe I'm just funny that way. I remember my father saying toward the end of his life, and he'd quit smoking. But I remember him looking at me toward the end of his life and said, "Son, I'd like to have a cigarette about as long as my arm." We didn't let him have that either. Just, you know, something to think about. If you make it to 105, I think you've... Well, for one, I think if you make it to 105... And you say on national television that you attribute your longevity to three Miller High Life beers and one nip of Johnny Walker Blue per day. If there were any regulations, and I know Republicans hate regulations and stuff, but we should probably have a law that says that, you know, whoever you name in that unpaid product placement probably has to provide you with whatever it is for the rest of your natural born days. It would seem that good common corporate sense would have had a Miller High Life truck backing up to Ms. Fenton's abode, and that the Johnny Walker people would have sent somebody in a fucking kilt over with a barrel of Johnny Walker Blue. Enjoy it enjoy it in good health, and long life to you, Lassie. Yeah. it's Keith 390, Todd 385. So we are down to $385 to go. Yay! And Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy have just put a $20 challenge on the table. So that would take us down to $345. If that challenge is met. Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Keith, and thank you very kindly to Todd. Thank you very, very much indeed. Okay, so that's just, okay, that was just a little grievance. Here's a moment of a moment of political analysis that might... At first blush, and sometimes they write headlines this way, it kind of pisses you off. You know, what? God damn it. Establishment shill? And what I'm talking about is some remarks that... David Axelrod, campaign manager for two winning campaigns for Barack Obama, offered on CNN, speaking, of course, to the one and only, as Mike refers to him, Wolf Blitzer. The whole thing begins with a prior statement by former Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper. Clapper said that he had become deeply concerned about Donald Trump's fitness to serve in office. This, of course, can be easily dismissed by a certain segment. Goddamn James Clapper, son of a bitch, lied to Congress. We sat there and we watched him lie to Congress. Our establishment shill. And probably, frothing at the mouth about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC, all of which are somewhat legitimate complaints, but, eyes on the prize. So Clapper said that, and it was a pretty damn big thing to say, for him to say. He can say it because he's the former Director of National Intelligence. Well, then the folks who book these kinds of things called David Axelrod because of his formidable campaign strategy skills and that kind of thing. A congressman whom I respect, Steve Cohen, out of Tennessee, among other things. He signed off on the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act a few times. That gets you a few points from me. Steve Cohen said that he plans to introduce articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. It won't go anywhere. The articles won't. Because Steve Cohen's a member of the minority, and the Republican Party, and especially the booger eaters, people like Steve King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Martha Roby and who's that one congressman in Tennessee who's pro-life but paid for his paid for the woman who isn't his wife to have abortions. I forget him, but the Republicans, they don't care. They're not going to move to impeach Donald Trump if he walks out on stage naked with one finger up his ass and the other one up his nose, while blowing a whistle with the other nostril, wearing a clown hat and deep sea diving fins. No, not going to do it. But as an indication of the mood of the nation, 40% of the American people support the idea of impeaching Donald Trump. And those articles could be somewhat of a rallying cry for people who want a return to constitutional governance. So those two things, Clapper and Cohen, occasioned a conversation on CNN. And it was there that the exchange happened with David Axelrod, if the damn thing will load. And thank you, by the way, thank you, Sylvia, for meeting Steve and Karen and Ms. Cletus, Steve and Ms. Karen and Little Cletus and Little Twiggy's challenge. Thank you very much. That takes us down to 3:45 to go. A little bit at a time, we can do this. Well, we could wait all day for the audio to load. You don't need it that much now, do you? What David Axelrod, and like I said, the headlines can be deceptive. And the story comes from Newsweek. Trump impeachment talk is dangerous, : David Axelrod. This, of course, is a clickbait headline designed specifically to get the unicorn, sparkle fart powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade in full gallop. And I understand why they would. But it's not quite as clear or as clicky as that headline would make it appear. Because what David Axelrod is actually saying is that these are, and for those of us who actually sat through the 77 minutes a couple of nights ago, what he's saying is that these are perilous times. And in point of fact, the maggots, the Make America Great Again Trumpansie scum, are dangerous people. And I confess, I tend to understand that sentiment. Really trying hard to get the audio to come up here. Production staff. Yeah, oh well. Let's try this again. Maybe? Possible?
Well, it was stunning because I overlapped briefly with Jim Clapper in government. I know him to be a sober, serious, committed public servant, someone who's not partisan in any way, and someone who isn't given to throwing away around incendiary words. And for him to characterize the president in that way and to raise these concerns seemed to me really significant and probably reflected thinking of others in the intelligence and national security community. And what's most disturbing, and he summed it up in his comments last night, is the worse things go for the president, the worse he seems to get. And we saw that during the campaign. We're seeing it now. The more he feels embattled, the more he lashes out and creates greater problems. But I have one other concern, Wolf, and that is, as much as I respect General Clapper, the thing that he left hanging was what we should do about it. He said, I don't think he's fit for office. And then, but he had no real answer to that. And the inference was that somehow there should be some effort to remove him, or at least that's how some people would have heard it. And I think we have to be very, very careful when we have these discussions, because we have a system, a constitutional system, and if people get a sense that there's some extraordinary measure that's going to be taken to affect what they would
view as a bloodless coup. Is a new fit a great fit for you?
Remember,
time out. I do hate these goddamn ads. Now, let's see if we can get that, now that we've gotten that out of the way.
We have a system, a constitutional system, and if people get a sense that there's some extraordinary measure that's going to be taken to affect what they would view as a bloodless coup, remember, a third of the country supports this president, that's a very dangerous road to go down. And if you ever did go down that road, you're opening a Pandora's box that will never end. So I was a little nervous about General Clapper's comments, even as I took them as a very, very serious admonition.
Oddly enough, for some reason, what David Axelrod says doesn't exactly jibe with the headline. Trump impeachment talk is dangerous. It's not what he said. I think we would do well to take seriously his observation that a third of the country supports this president. And it's a dangerous road to go down, And if you go down that road, you're opening a Pandora's box that'll never end. The place I disagree with David Axelrod is the point where I come to is, hey, we've got a Constitution. Impeachment is in the Constitution for specifically such moments as this. And if you just sit around hoping that having an absolute certifiable goddamn madman in the White House, that we're just going to sit there and let him roll the dice for the next 4 or 8 years and hope that it never comes up snake eyes, well, the odds are decidedly not in your favor, our favor, that he won't. Okay? He's going to roll snake eyes. There is a clear and present danger to whatever remains of our attempt at having a self-governing republic. But I'm not gonna sit here and go, establishment shill, goddamn it. No. And I take his other point to heart. I think we have to be very, very careful when we have these discussions, because we have a system, a constitutional system, and if people get a sense that there's some extraordinary measure that's going to be taken to effect what they would view as a bloodless coup, that's another way of saying if we remove Donald J. Trump from office, the Trumpanzees are going to go fucking crazy. And you know why? You know why I said that? Because they will. But again, as I referenced last night, I think I'm almost rock solid certain that this does come from Shakespeare. Let's check. If 'twere done, 'twere best done quickly. Something in me thinks that comes from the Scottish play. That's what I thought. It's actually, if 'twere done when 'tis done, then 'twere well it were done. And it's not from a pretty part of the play. We've already been through the Shakespeare problem with the hissy that they had over Julius Caesar. But if you are going to, how do I make this clear? If you're going to impeach a president because the president has gone insane, then you'd better do it before he goes insaner. Not a word, I realize. But I'm a professional practitioner of the art of word knowing, and I can get away with it. Things are not going to get better as he goes more nuts. This country has actually had arguably not all home presidents for a variety of reasons. Franklin Pierce, for instance, spent his term in office just, you know, drunk. Who knows what kind of motivations James Buchanan had for continuing to coddle the South? Now there's a complex character. James Buchanan he coddled the South, trying to hold the Union together. At the same time, out of his own pocket, he would buy slaves and then free them in the North. Nixon was arguably raving paranoid mad in his second term, whatever he had. Reagan's brain was on the way out the door before his hand came off the Bible in his second term. And as we pointed out before, in conversation. I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. You, I, we've talked about it. The Constitution provides for impeaching and removing from office a president who has committed high crimes and misdemeanors. There's no provision in the Constitution or in the body of the original Constitution for removing a president who is mentally ill. Later on, in the 1960s, we get the 25th Amendment, and we've had a lengthy 25th Amendment conversation. But again, that can only happen if it is triggered by a majority of the cabinet plus the vice president. We can wish for it, but really, Betsy DeVos? Betsy DeVos, for the good of the nation, is going to say that Donald J. Trump has left the station? Ben Carson? Really? Scott Pruitt, who is getting his lifelong dreams come true of wrecking every piece of environmental legislation this country has ever passed? Again, they don't care if he starts coming to cabinet meetings stark raving naked, stark raving mad, and answering every question with jabberwocky. So impeachment becomes the only method. But what I take Axelrod to be saying is that it's not some sort of magical incantation process whereby zip and he's impeached and he's gone. We have proven time and again that this country has what may wind up to be terminally short memory. We don't remember that after an impeachment there has to be a trial in the Senate. We also don't remember that the Senate reserves the right to let the trial be whatever they declare the trial is. And that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court just kind of stands there until the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court decides what he wants the trial to be. Or she. Right now, he. We've never had a she. And consequently, and I see it all the time in social media. You know, we need to just impeach Trump and get it over with. Okay, great. Who's going to do that? But finally, and I mentioned this last night, and it's worth going over again. Let's say you impeach him because the Democrats actually managed to get their shit together, act with unity, support Democratic nominees in November general elections, not get sidetracked with independents and that kind of foolishness, and actually take back both the House and the Senate. Let's posit that. I know. Ain't gonna happen. But still, let's for the sake of argument, let's posit that. Okay. So you impeach him. All it takes is a simple majority to impeach. 50% plus 0.0001. So then it goes to the Senate. Again, let's say that there are 51 Democratic and or independent senators. That the Senate is then has a majority leader in Chuck Schumer. Establishment shill! And let's even say that you can get 26 Republicans to go along with convicting Donald Trump of whatever he's impeached for, and God knows there's a lot of possibilities there. So he's convicted. He stands convicted. Well, you still have to overcome John Roberts not John Roberts has to not overturn the conviction. John Roberts, as presiding judge of the trial, has to not keep his thumb on the scales. And John Roberts has to uphold the conviction. He has to render final judgment as a judge. And then you have to remove Donald Trump from office. Our governmental processes run exceedingly slowly. I mean, those of us who were around and paying attention, we know how long the impeachment process took for Bill Clinton. And then the trial process. And of course, that was no conviction, and it's over. But the United States of America has never, ever seen, has never experienced, has never even tried to effect the removal of a president from office. Nixon saw the handwriting on the wall and said, "Well, Henry, I'm out of here." He literally wrote his resignation letter to Henry Kissinger. "Dear Henry, goddamn Jews, I have to quit. Goodbye." At the last minute, he scratched out the part about the Jews. It's all on the tapes. It's the Jews, Henry. And then he gave that final faux bravado wave, got on the helicopter, and left. But we have never, ever, ever faced a situation where they say, "Donald," they say, "Mr. President, you've been impeached, you've been convicted, you got to go." And from the moment that the conviction was rendered to the moment that it was said that he had to go, we're Democrats, liberals, progressives, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, and we don't act like this. Do you remember the Brooks Brothers riot in South Florida in 2000? Because I do. When a whole bunch of Republican operatives, if I recall correctly, driven by, who's that shitbird? The really kinky one, the documentary we talked about. Anyway, orchestrated it. And it was sufficient to ruin the recount and essentially put George W. Bush in office in 2000. And we said, "Oh, that's too bad. Those people aren't being very nice. Oh, what a shame. What a pity they have to be that way. Don't they know that this is a nice country?" And nobody really, you know, from our side, there weren't any, if the Republicans had the Brooks Brothers riot, we didn't have the Sears and Roebuck riot. The Kmart riot, whatever. Yeah, I know, 2/3. Oh, God. There it is. Simple. No, Steve, you read it wrong, buddy. What I said was right. The House of Representatives must first pass by a simple majority, 50% plus 0.0001, articles of impeachment. At that point, the president is impeached. Then the Senate tries the president, and that verdict must be rendered by a 2/3 majority, which is 67 members of the Senate. because there are 100 senators. But the question is, how many tens of thousands of bloodthirsty maggots would there be in Washington, D.C. after the order came down to remove Donald J. Trump from office? And Roger Stone, thank you. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Roger Stone. Yeah. Midwife of the Brooks Brothers riot. And that's the Pandora's box that David Axelrod is referring to. Because that group of people who support Trump, whose number is never going to fall between below 33%, they're hardcores. They're hard cases. They're dead enders. They're maggots. Make America great again, Trumpansy scum. And they will engage in some level of insurrection. And they will not take it kindly. And the question you have to answer is, do you feel lucky? Well, do you, Democrat? Because there's every reason in the world to believe that would cause civil insurrection. Okay. Kim in New Jersey says, a sane Pence is worse than a crazy Trump. Pence will be more effective at legislatively dismantling the safety net very quickly. Trump and Pence will both stack the courts with the same quality judiciary, so no difference there. We're effing screwed long-term either way. There's no recovering from Trump's election. Thank you, Founding Fathers, for the Electoral College. Democrats will not take back anything in 2018 with Pence in office. Better chance if Trump remains. Yeah. I think that's a strong argument. Hey, thank you very kindly to Paul. Paul says, "Hey, Paul. Hey, Bob. Still listening every day, Paul." And took the fundraising goal down to 3:30. I think, yeah, 3:30. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly. This would be a good night for lots of folks to jump on the bandwagon, and so we don't have to have a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. Because we tried for one of those last week and didn't work out. And there are a couple of bills that if they're not paid by tomorrow, maybe no more on Monday. Now, this is not me going all Oral Roberts on you. It's not. It's how capitalism works. So, thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly. And thank you for listening every day. Moments like this, when I'm saying things that I've said in the past, may be a little bit tedious. I apologize. But it's a question worth asking. Let me ask you another question. Do you think if Trump were to be impeached, that he would pull a Nixon and politically fall on his sword? Can you count on somebody who, I think we all agree, is probably certifiably insane to do that? Or would he rather see the country burn down around him? And this really is a deep philosophical question. It is a question of whether or not the Constitution of the United States is to be taken seriously. I tend to fall on the side of the Constitution, but again, that's me. And I think that every time we let a president skate on the actual commission of high crimes and misdemeanors, we make it a little harder for this country to ever actually be what it was designed to be. We let, and you know, Katherine Graham and Ben Bradley had a hand in it, we let Reagan skate. I remember when those two from the high ivory tower of the Washington Post declared that the United States cannot stand another constitutional crisis. Horseshit. Thanks to the fact that nobody had the guts to impeach Reagan, well, look at how much stuff flows downhill from there. Last night, Jim talked about, comparatively speaking, what a fairly well-experienced and decent man Pappy Bush was. What would have happened to this country if we'd had Pappy Bush in Reagan's second term instead of Reagan? And that's that parlor game that people who love history love to play better than, well, we love to play that better than Scrabble. Even dirty Scrabble. So it's... I'm not willing to just damn David Axelrod's remarks out of hand because I think there's an element of correctness to it. I'm not saying don't impeach him, if we ever could. And right now it's just mental masturbation. But if you could impeach and remove Donald Trump from office for the sake of the Republic, would you be ready for what comes next? Would you be ready for 100 cars slamming into crowds and not just one? Would you be ready for the open carry goons of the NRA to not just open carry, but open fire? Oh, well, but we could call out the National Guard, Bob. We could... How many of them are Trumpanzees? There are questions we do not have answers to in this country, and a big one is the extent to which both the military and the police forces are subverted to right-wing ideology. So, I'm just asking. And remember, high crimes and misdemeanors within the Constitution, those are not legal standards. Those are political standards. And as David in South Carolina points out, we have a Cat 3 hurricane bearing down on the Gulf Coast and no FEMA director and no secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. How about that? Arguably, the failure to even, and we're not talking about the person hasn't been approved or confirmed or the goddamn obstructionist Democrats are slow walking a nomination. We're talking about an administration that has not been able to be bothered to make the nominations. Geezer Disgustus was yammering on about Afghanistan the other night, and along the way mentioned India. Guess what? We don't have an ambassador to India. That's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. Whew. Yeah. So let's go over and let's talk with John in Central PA. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, I wanted to tell you, tomorrow night I may not be able to be on the front porch. It's looking like I probably will, but I wanted to call in tonight just in case, because there is something that's on my mind that I'd like to get off my chest and I'd like to get your thoughts on.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll tell you, when Trump goes off the rails, I actually like it, and here's why. Because I see the reactions. I see raw reactions from people that sees, like, the West Virginia Boy Scout debacle, like the other night, you know, like his response to Charlottesville, things like that, where people, you have real raw reactions. It's unlike other reactions that people have when people, like when Democrats and others try to, in the media, try to attack him on certain things that even if he deserves to be attacked on, they just kind of poo-poo it, like, oh, they're just poor Donald's getting attacked again. But when he – there's nothing more credible when the man himself exposes his own lunacy. And I like that because I – not because I want the country to be subjected to that. It's because people need to be exposed to that. So today I saw a headline from NOF. I'm sorry. I meant CNN. NOF is my nickname I have for them, and it's Normalizers of Fascism.
Nice.
Which, by the way, they have Heather Heyer's blood on their hands, just like all the other ones, because of, you know, words like white nationalists instead of fucking neo-Nazis. But anyway, I saw a headline from them. Trump calls for unity.
Oh, really, yeah. The American Legion speech yesterday in Reno.
Exactly. When really it should have said, Trump calls for unity in yet another speech, unlike all the other divisive speeches that he's made. Because in that same speech, he says that he pretty much implies that Obama is the one who divided this country. That's his fault. And he also says something to the effect that people were happier now that he's president compared to a year ago.
Yeah, you saw the eclipse meme, right?
No.
Yeah, he retweeted some right-wing maggots meme that showed Barack Obama in grayscale and then in color over the course of four frames, Trump eclipses Obama.
Oh, yeah, but he loved that because, you know, he just can't. There's something about Obama that drives this fucker up the wall. And
It was pointed out the other night. What the reason he hates Obama as much as he does? One, he's a filthy racist. Okay, and that's where the birtherism comes from and everything. But two, it's because at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner, the White House Correspondents' Dinner of 2009, Barack Obama savaged him from the podium.
Right. I think it's 2012.
Was it 12? Okay, 12. Yeah, it was 12. Just absolutely destroyed him.
Because he was pissed off.
And made him sit there and like it. Because he couldn't get up and walk out because everybody would have called him the little pissant that he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of remember that. I remember when he was going around the country, you know, doing his whole birther shit. And even people that now, like, worship him. No, people don't support him. They worship him. They really do. But even people that worship him now, Republicans and stuff, were like, this is fucking racism. You know, like they knew what it was. And now he has Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s niece up there stumping for him and shit, and it's just like they're trying to really make a beeline for
but John, please understand, please understand, Velveeta King is crazier than a sprayed roach at a decon rave. Okay,
yeah, she's not
respected.
Oh,
so,
okay. I hope not. You hear about the council that she sits on? It's what's it called? POTUS Guard or something like that. Protect POTUS. It is a council of Presbyterians who believes that Donald Trump was anointed by God. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say people worship her. I often think to myself, what is it about this guy? And I realize, oh, God, that's right. It's a cult. I read an article way back, like during the election. I forget who did the article, but it was somebody who used to be in Scientology. And the guy said, he's trying to put a link between Trump and Scientology. He said, first of all, there's a bunch of Scientologists who support him. You know what I mean? And he's like, second of all, he's forming a cult unlike the Scientology cult. Or not unlike the Scientology cult. You know, what's going on in this country, what people are seeing right now, is a full-fledged cult. That's what it is. And going back to the media quick, I think that this regime is going to reap some very horrible and possibly bloody results. I mean, when this is all over, I think that a lot of people's lives are going to be ruined. And I think that I'm 100% believe that the media is absolutely complicit in all of this. They're the ones who propped him up. They coddled him, just like Alison Camerota. How many times has she had these fucking Trump pansy panels? This is like the third or fourth time, the one that you showed the other day. It's like the third or fourth time. It's like they don't think that anybody besides Trump supporters exist in this country. They don't think we matter. This is the ultimate defranchisement, us. They're defranchising us by doing that. And we got to hear about how ignored the poor Trump supporter was. You know who is really ignored and who has been throughout this whole campaign, the whole campaign process, their primaries and everything? Us, you and I, real progressives. We're the ones who were ignored. How many times did you see Bernie Sanders supporters on their fucking CNN shows and shit?
Bernie had a hell of a hard time with media, and that is forever on the media. But he didn't, ultimately Bernie didn't have a problem reaching people. People just chose not to vote for Bernie. Let's remember, Hillary beat Trump by 3 million votes. In the Democratic primaries, she beat Bernie by almost 3 million votes, okay?
And
that's my problem with the argument that the DNC should have nominated Bernie anyway. So you're gonna go to the convention, you're gonna nominate Bernie, and you're gonna do so against the wishes of more than 2 million voters who wanted the other person. Now, I think I came up with the right answer at the time of the convention. If you go back and you listen, you'll find me absolutely horrified when she nominates or names Tim Kaine to be her running mate.
Oh, that was fucking awful, man.
And had there been a unity ticket, Hillary and Bernie, had she swallowed her pride and named Bernie to be the vice president, and had Bernie swallowed his pride and agreed to run that way, then neither the Hilarians nor the Burners would have had anything to bitch about, and you would have had arguably had a whole lot of people, a whole lot more than 3 million people going to the polls and voting for her, especially in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Right.
The political calculus that would have been the equivalent of asking James Montgomery Scott to mix up a little antimatter and matter and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, like during the primary, somebody in the Democratic Party or her campaign or whatever, it wasn't good at strategy because if Bernie Sanders would have gotten the nomination, all the Hillary Clinton supporters who were basically just like dyed-in-the-wool Democrats, you know, would have voted for Bernie anyway. There would have been a couple defectors here and there. There would have been a couple pissed-off people, but they probably would have voted for him. And, like, I don't know if I'm just a decent strategist or not. I mean, I'm one of those people who predicted the outcome of this election very early on. I mean, I was saying in December of 2015, I was getting laughed at by my Republican friends when I told them Trump is going to be the next president. And I said it's December of 2015. But a friend of mine is running for, well, ran in a primary this year in his hometown. Well, not his hometown, but a town that he lives in called Hellam. It's right outside of York City here in Pennsylvania. And he was challenging the 30-year incumbent Democratic mayor, who is basically in name only. I mean, the guy's, you know, evangelical, and, you know, he's pro-life. He's not really a Democrat, but anyway, he ran against him, and at first he tried to run on a anti-Trump type base campaign, because it is a pretty Democratic area where he's at. I said, don't do that. I said, do not do that. Don't even bring Trump up. But he didn't listen to me, and he got doors slammed in his face. And then he came back to me and he said, I think I'm going to do what you said, and I'm going to drop the whole anti-Trump shtick, and I'm just going to focus on local issues, and I'm not going to say a word about Trump. He blew that primary out. I'm not saying it's because of me. I mean, it's all about the candidate. You know, I'm just saying he used a strategy of mine, and it helped him. And people like that need to be more open to that kind of strategy. But now he's going to be the next mayor, because the Republican actually after that, the incumbent, the guy that he beat, the Democrat, turned around and endorsed him. So the guy that was going to run against him as a Republican chucked out of the race, was like, I'm not going to beat him, because this guy also had some Republicans vote for him too. And, you know, and he's, you know, he's a gay man, young though. And well, what I'm getting at with this is there's hope for one thing, and two, strategy can go a long way. And but do you agree with it that if Bernie would have got the nomination, that Hillary Clinton's hardcore supporters would have just said, I'm going to vote for him anyway, right?
Yeah, because that's what they, I mean, the vast majority of them did exactly that in 2009 when Barack Obama handed her ass.
Yep.
They said, right. Hey, look, you know, I mean, we're Democrats. We recognize that the Democratic nominee is better than the Republican nominee. And therefore, and you know what? Let me be clear about something, John. I'm doing my dead level best to put 2016 behind me. It's hard to. It's damn difficult to, because there's a whole lot of people who aren't. And it makes it hard for me to hold my tongue, which is kind of contrary to the whole idea of what we're doing here, having a honest, non-commercial, you know, uncensored conversation. But I'm trying, and so, you know, I'll say this. If the purity types ever actually manage to get their shit together enough to have their candidate get more votes in the primary than another candidate, and their candidate becomes the nominee, you know what I'm going to do? Even if their candidate wasn't my candidate, you know what I'm going to do, John?
No, vote for it.
I'm going to vote for their candidate as the Democratic nominee for president.
Same here.
Because
you know,
I am all grown up. I'm not going to go and have a political hissy in the corner and do everything in my power to fuck my country for not nominating somebody who couldn't get enough votes to get the nomination.
Right. It's just like Howard Dean's supporters. I think his supporters probably voted for, what was that, 2004? They probably voted for John Kerry, you know, and most of them at least. That's the way, like you said the other night, during the primary, you have your guy that you love, and then during the general election, you basically fall in line. and that's the way.
Yeah,
it
and
be.
People and people hate that idea of falling in line because it sounds a little too much like coming being brought to heel. Okay, which is one of those moments that you wish you could just go back and take back, but the opposition research on both Bernie and Hillary was goddamn thick. Okay, they both had plenty of stuff with and remember, the sleaze machine, the filth machine, runs on money. And in our election system, with Citizens United and super PACs and all of that evil crap, they got the money to make the opposition research stick. And in this particular election, one like no other, but there will be more, they used intense data analysis to make that opposition research stick even more. I mean, right down to a street, a street number by street number basis. And they had help. They had help.
Right. Russians. And I actually argued with a couple of Russian bots, too, during the election, not really knowing before all the Russian stuff came out. And it's so bad. They were so effective, Bob, that I actually, and Tom Hartman mentioned this way back, like around the convention time, that they were people that are supposed to be on our side were actually, and still are, regurgitating right-wing talking points, like fascist right-wing talking points, because they've heard it, because that machine they had, the filth machine, as you call it, was so effective that, and they're even still doing it. And now they're, and like I said the other night, they're unwitting tools for the fascist right. And to the point where a lot of them want to see the Democratic Party fail, I guess because they think that there's going to be something else that comes up in its place. They don't, without realizing that what the Democratic Party failing means is that Republican, what's going to do is it's going to create a vacuum. The Republican Party is going to absorb all the seats that would have been occupied by Democrats, and then all the elected positions. Also, the Republican primary voters are going to be the ones deciding who runs the country every time. It's going to be you'll have your choice with a teabagger, who wants to cut every single – wants to get rid of every single social safety net, or you'll have the neocon – who wants to go to, all these fucking wars and shit. And that's what's going to happen. They don't realize that's what's going to happen, but it will happen that way if the Democratic Party fails. That Democratic Party, the reason why I'm sticking with them right now is because they're that firewall between us and utter fascism, which fascism is already here. I mean, we're seeing it right now. What you saw the other night, fascism. And the fact that the fact alone that he's doing all these rallies and he's not stopping, there's no end in sight. He's got rallies scheduled all the way up into next year. Seriously. Isn't that ridiculous?
Yeah, and he was twooping his brains out this morning. I don't know if you caught that or not, but he was.
No.
he retwooped the meme I told you about. And he's gone to war with Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. See, he thinks that he can take that 33%, those hard cases and dead enders, and that they can bring enough pressure to bear to change the political calculus. But and they might. I mean, for instance, the guy who goes by the and I'm enjoying his campaign, and it's really impressive this early on. The guy whose nickname is Iron Stash, who's running against who's running as a Democrat against Paul Ryan. If Trump unleashes his Trumpanzees, and they somehow beat Paul Ryan in the primary, well, Iron Stash's chances go up. If they if he unleashes them, and he has, on Jeff Flake in Arizona, then and the chemtrails lady gets the nomination. Well, whoever runs against her, who would probably be Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona, her chances go up. Now, this all goes without saying that whether I'm talking about Iron Stash in Wisconsin or Congresswoman Sinema in Arizona, we do have to understand that neither of these people are anywhere near ideologically pure enough.
There's got to be a disclaimer.
Always. There's always going to be that disclaimer. Because there's going to be some political newborn out there going, oh, but Jesus, she's not willing to sell out a woman's right to choose for single payer. Goddamn.
Like secular talk, he's like that.
Oh, I keep hearing about this guy. I he may be awesome.
He's not bad.
No,
he's actually not that bad. But he does annoy me sometimes because, well, I commented during the election, general election, how many videos he criticized Hillary Clinton versus Trump, and there was more criticizing Hillary than Trump.
Sure.
But when it comes to progressive issues, and he tries to be, he does this thing where he tries to be objective, but in doing so, he renders himself, like I keep saying, going back to this unwitting tool for the right wing, because that he does things that the right wing is probably going, ha, yes. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the right wing is sitting back, twirling their mustaches and saying, I love these Bernie supporters. You know, the ones that.
Yeah, but I'm trying like hell to get past 2016, and I don't want to goon on them. The ones who annoy me are the ones who, you know, really do behave like political newborns, who think that, for instance, the ones who write me and say, Paula Jean can win, when, bless her heart, Paula Jean Swearingen doesn't have a candle's chance in hell.
Right.
Okay, of beating Joe Manchin in the primary. It simply does not exist because there are not enough progressives in West Virginia to do the job.
Yeah,
there aren't.
I mean, it's becoming like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is kind of what, like, West Virginia in some senses when it comes to political stuff or when it comes to politics. Like we both used to be a pretty damn blue state, both of these.
Fairly reliably so, yes.
And now Pennsylvania is basically red. I mean, Scott Wagner, he had an incident. He had like a Gianforte type incident. He assaulted somebody because they were taking pictures of him. And he, this guy, like, he owns this thing, this company called Penn Waste. And they basically, I know people that work for Penn Waste, it's a garbage company. And he pays them fucking dirt, dude. Like, he pays them so little to do really, really hard, back-breaking work. And he hates unions. He said that unions are like Hitler and Mussolini, Hitler and Stalin and stuff, not realizing the irony in that statement. He's a very vicious, disgusting, far-right-wing teabagger type who is trying to make laws to suit himself, his businesses and stuff. But he's running for governor. And he had a Gianforte incident where he stole somebody's – took a camera out of a reporter's hand and an independent reporter and stole the SIM card from it – or not the SIM card, the SD card. And those big SD cards for those cameras are like $300, and he stole that from it. And, you know, because he caught him saying something stupid on camera. And luckily, the guy has it per his camera program so that when he films it, it goes on the SD card and copies on an internal hard drive on the camera. So he captured it.
Anyway.
But here's the thing, Bob. His poll numbers went up after that went viral.
Oh yeah. Well, look, fascists love violence. Okay.
Yep.
They do. And that's that Pandora's box that David Axelrod was talking about. You know, going back to what I was saying about dark money and Oppo research and all of that stuff, Laurel asked the question, will there ever be a Democratic candidate who will never be vulnerable to Oppo research? And the answer is no.
But more importantly, there will never be media unwilling to take the money to run the ads. Because as Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, prophet that he was, said, that's a good dollar.
Yeah. That's why they're so complicit in all this. You know, that's one of the reasons, because it was all about money for them. And we all know about the link, the huge link between fascism and money. There's a huge link to it. They actually go hand in hand. Actually, fascism is more or less a far-right version of an oligarchy. You know, so, I mean, Mussolini basically, I guess in some interview or something.
For instance, Russia is far nearer, if they aren't already on top of it, far nearer being a fascist autocracy than anything even vaguely resembling communism. Okay?
Exactly.
Communism, and in many ways, communism was always a sham in the Soviet Union anyway, because it never really manifested itself, especially after Lenin dies, and then Stalin seizes control. He was just a homicidal, genocidal maniac. Okay, what? And he surrounded himself with very effective other homicidal, genocidal maniacs, and then picked them off at his leisure from time to time. But with the money thing, you either have to stomp them or get used to them. You're not gonna win close races with them, because even if I tried to enunciate this months ago, even if you say, well, you know, maybe 1% of the Republican Party is Nazis. Well, you know what? In a 50-50 race, 1% is enough to get you the victory now, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
I maintain that 33% of the Republican Party are either neo-Nazis, Klansmen, or sympathizers thereof or therewith. And meanwhile, Steve Bannon and Milo, I played the audio on this program. They say that the GOP base is more than 50% alt-white. John, other people, well, that can't possibly be true. You know, show me some empirical goddamn data that says that it isn't.
Well, first of all, there's a poll out that says about 9% of the whole country thinks that the alt-right is on point. You know, so there's that.
I just got something from News Ninja Gene a little bit ago. A majority of Trump voters think Christians face the most discrimination.
And whites. Yep, I saw that too, right on Twitter there. It's all because of propaganda, because the media, they allow this propaganda to penetrate. The media, the mainstream media that is always called liberal media, which is the biggest bullshit I've ever heard in my life.
Yes.
I mean, they engage in propaganda. I notice it a lot. Because we're going to have Marshall Blackburn on debating Bill Nye, the science guy, who has been researching. I know he only has a degree in mechanical engineering or something.
Only.
He is the scientist. I know. I didn't mean only. I mean, he doesn't have a degree in climate, you know, science or geography or whatever. And not geography, but what would be the field for that, for climate?
Any number of things, meteorology, geophysics,
right.
What have you.
He's a student of it. Dude, there's a clip of him back in like the 90s talking about global warming, you know, in one of his episodes, in one of his shows. So, I mean, he's a student of climate change. Marshall Blackburn is just a fucking shill for the fossil fuel industry. And they have, you know, Anderson Cooper will have her on there debating him. And at the end of it, they say, well, he'll shrug his shoulders and say, who knows who's right? You know, that kind of thing. And that does a disservice to the truth. When you have somebody on, when you have a Trump supporter on, a surrogate on, lying, peddling lies, saying things like Obama started the Afghanistan war and shit back during the campaign, you're peddling propaganda. That's what you're doing. What they need to do is say, no more Trump supporters on here if they're gonna fucking lie. You know what I'm saying? When they don't call them out on lies, that's propaganda.
Didn't MSNBC cut away from Trump's speech the other night on the premise that we're not going to just sit here and broadcast lies?
I don't know. I didn't see it because I guess I'm a fucking snowflake or whatever you want to call me.
No, you're not.
I'm anxiety prone. This shit scares me, dude.
I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you didn't because, and I'm not trying to just reprise the program from last night or whatever. But if you saw that and you've got a working brain and you didn't come away from it disturbed as all hell, you may be over-medicated. I don't know.
Or a sociopath.
Well, okay, I'll give you that. But I mean, it was that creepy, and he'll be that creepy again. Because they can't. They talked about the difference between, and that was part of his twoop storm this morning. Dishonest fake media saying they don't like how many they don't like my different tones. I thought, oh my God, he's gonna turn into a '90s pop star. He's gonna be Tone Joke.
yeah.
Thank you. I'll give myself a cowbell for that.
There you go.
but it's not his tone. It's that the Afghanistan speech he was reading. The Reno speech he was reading. He was reading, and it's just like with the forced speech over Charlottesville. He was reading things that he didn't really believe. The real Donald Trump was there in Phoenix, freestyling, mugging to the crowd, doing his best Mussolini impression. Yeah, you could freeze frame that thing any number of times and talk about just sliding a photograph over somebody. He's Mussolini. I mean, he looks like the dude, okay?
He does. He fucking does.
And the behavior and the arm gestures and the turning around and Jesus Christ.
And that's where we're at, man. And I fear for the country because I also, not just because of him, but also because of the people that support him. And I look around me and I say, holy shit, there's a lot of people who I guess think either that's cool or they'll just joke around about it and say, oh, don't worry about it. It's just Trump, Even people that don't support him that I know, like my dad, he always poo-poos this shit. And he's just like, oh, well, that's politics.
Yeah, and see, that comes from a different place. That's from back in the day when Ronnie Reagan would say things like ketchup is a vegetable. And they people would go, God damn, really? And they'd say,
right.
Oh, that's just Reagan being Reagan.
And the whole George H.W. Bush not knowing how to scan something. That kind of thing. And this is not that. This is serious shit. One of these days, one of these people are going to haul off and physically
and start killing people?
Well, journalists, to start with. And what's the media going to say then? It'll just be the next day he'll have a press conference.
Yeah, God forbid. What will they do when the person getting run over is a correspondent for a major media operation?
Right, and you know what will happen?
Let me ask you a question. This is totally tangential, John, but let me ask you a question. Have you watched The Handmaid's Tale yet?
No.
It's on Hulu. I don't know if you've got access to Hulu, but I recommend it because, well, one, the book, Margaret Atwood's book is amazing. I read it eons ago. It's not the same as the book. But the picture that they obviously quite deliberately paint of the rise of a theocratic fascist government in the United States is terrifying. And
you know what that's about.
And it's believable. And one of the things that and Agnes and I were watching it and discussing it last night, and I said one of the things that makes it most terrifying is where it is set. It's set in a near future. I mean, the cars still run on rubber tires, okay? All the characters in the beginning are dressed just like anybody you'd see on the street today. But there are references to the attacks and martial law and the suspension of habeas corpus and the suspension of the Constitution.
That's coming soon.
And then everything just gets fucking weird. Because other things have happened, too. I'm not giving anything away. It's premised on a time when it becomes more and more difficult for human beings to reproduce.
Oh, wow.
And so the value of a woman who can actually carry a baby to term and have the baby be healthy becomes monumental. Religious zealotry, yada yada. Like I said, it's a theocratic fascism. But the thing that I noticed right off the bat is it is set. I mean, theocratic fascism. You tell me, John, where would you set a story about theocratic fascism?
I don't know, Middle Ages?
No. I didn't say when. I said where.
Oh, okay, because the setting could be a different time.
Where in the United States would you set a story about theocratic fascism rising in the United States?
Alabama.
Ta-da, ding. Wait a minute, okay. Right, Alabama,
oh, nice.
Mississippi, Texas. This is set in Massachusetts.
Oh, really? Holy shit.
And there's references to people trying to sneak over the border from Maine into Canada. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's just like, you know, Trump is from New York City. I mean, that's, you know what I mean, though? Like, that's the same kind of topsy-turvy type shit that comes along, I guess, with something like fascism, you know, and I can't believe, but my brother who's a libertarian type guy, he told me not that long, a couple weeks, because you know he's a like real big into history, especially World War II history. He said I always wondered how Hitler came to power. He said how could a body politic allow that to happen? And he looked at me and said, this is how it happens, you know, and that's where people like libertarians, we're going to need them on our side because we will use them as allies. We'll have to. But, you know, not to get off the libertarian weeds, but, you know, this is how it happens, man. This is how it starts. This is how it starts. And it starts with a figure like Trump. And I'm not saying that he might be the epicenter of all this, but I think there's people in the background that are pulling some strings too, you know. I think I might have told you when I first started calling in, that I think what's happening is American fascists kind of waited in the wings for all the World War people that were of age of conscience during World War II.
Yeah, they waited for him to die off. The same thing happened with the assaults on assault on Social Security and the assault on the social safety net. They had to wait until the FDR generation was dead. Because people like my grandmother and my parents would have been in the streets over anybody talking about touching Social Security.
Right.
But you know, she was long since in the dirt, both my mother and my grandmother. By the time George Bush said in January 2005 that he was going to spend some political capital and reform Social Security, now fortunately he got stymied.
Right.
So I mean, yeah, that's a valid point. Now you said something a minute ago that I want to take issue with. You said we're going to need the libertarians. Did I understand?
We'll need them. We need them as allies. Yeah.
Yeah. Guess what? You're not going to have them.
Okay. I mean, you know, it's. You're probably right, but
the modern notion of libertarians are just basically Republicans who want to. They're hard right wing Republicans who want to smoke dope.
Yeah, well, what I meant it in the context of not really as far as certain issues. I'm saying when shit hits the fan.
No, no, no. They will wave bye bye to the Constitution faster than a commie.
Yeah.
And because they'll it's for national security. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know more about that than I do. I mean, you've been around, you've been involved in politics, I mean, since before I was around and stuff. So, yeah, I'm not involved in just following.
I mean, I learned to follow politics the same time I learned to play baseball. Literally, I'd come home from baseball practice and the Watergate hearings would be on.
Damn. Well, you know what? I've been meaning to ask you something. It's kind of a sort of personal, so you don't want to answer, that's fine, man. So I'm thinking that if I'm wondering it, I'm sure a lot of other people in the Horn family community congregation are wondering it too. Are your kids progressive? Please tell me none of your kids voted for Trump.
None of them. Well, I hope none of them did. I think three out of four I'm certain about. The fourth one... the significant other is a hardcore right-wing Republican. And is beyond the reach of Agnes and me, and it's disturbing.
Oh shit. Oh, that sucks, man. So, cuz I know you said you took your daughter to vote and shit, and I'm you know, I was kind of wondering, like, oh shit, I wonder if they voted for the same person. You know, it's because
three out of four would not pee on Donald Trump to put on a, they wouldn't piss in his mouth if his guts were on fire, as we say around here.
Okay, I'm hoping your son is progressive.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, he is, but he's also, to be fair, he's affected by the culture in which he's grown up. And his entire peer group is Trumpansy. He's got a friend that he grew up with, who thinks Hitler had some pretty good ideas. And the first time I heard him tell me that story, I was like, "Boy, sit down, we're going to talk."
Yeah.
And that was the night that I started showing him photographs from the liberation of the death camps.
Oh, so you didn't want him to start getting indoctrinated early?
Well, I didn't even want to run the vague risk that it would rub off.
Right, because that's how it starts, dude. It is.
Well, I mean, that's one of the questions I've been asking, is, you know, how, because there are so many of these stories about little right wing turds out there. How do they get to be little right wing turds? And you know, for instance, in particular, the story of the family out of, what was it, North Dakota, the kid who went to the Charlottesville rally, and mom and dad said, "We're both bleeding heart liberals, and we don't know what happened to our kid, but he ain't welcome in our home because he's a Nazi."
Yeah.
When he renounces his Nazism, he'll be welcome again.
I saw that story.
And my heart just went out to those parents, because is it rebellion against mommy and daddy? Is it adolescent rebellion? I mean, could that be it? But still, they're picking the information up somewhere. Are they picking it up in gamer culture? Are they picking it up on social media? We really don't know the answer, John.
Right.
You're more likely to have the answer to that than I am. I mean, you know, I'm just a cranky old white dude. But I gotta wrap up. We're at 10 minutes till, and I don't want to be leaping out the door or anything. But we've had a great conversation this evening, John, and I'm sure everybody else has enjoyed it as much as have I. And of course, naturally, I hope it will happen again. And if you're not able to be here tomorrow night, that's fine. You have a pass for tomorrow.
All right. Hey, real quick before I go, with the day that your son did his performance, which was great, I noticed that he has a really thick Southern accent. So I just
he kind of lays that one on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he knows how to talk right.
Okay, because you're from Alabama, but you seem to have kind of a Yankee type accent going on there.
Yeah, it's because I've hung out with Yankees. The guy from Pennsylvania tells me I got a Yankee accent. I'm going to hell. I had classes. I can do Shakespeare, you know.
Shit.
You know, now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this son of York, and all the clouds that lowered upon our housetops in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Yeah, I can do that shit.
You should do that in the middle of the grocery store one time.
Oh, I do. I do.
Damn it.
I dance to the music at the checkout aisle and embarrass my children.
Well, that's what dads are supposed to do, man.
I thought so.
Don't you know that?
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool as shit. Man, I bet it's never a dull moment in your house.
For more reasons than you can even begin to imagine.
Because you are one hell of an interesting dude. I mean, mind is always, but first time I heard your show.
Oh, no. I'm duller than dishwater off air. I really am.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I just sit around and every once in a while I'll belch or fart or pick my nose or something.
Oh, dude, I could sit down and talk to you for a whole year straight about Civil War, all kinds of shit. We never have enough time, though.
No. I love that stuff. I do. I just like to do stuff. Sometimes you like to sit around. Sometimes you like to go outside and swing the weed eater. Sometimes you like to push the mower. Sometimes you like to go to the beach once every 12 years. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whether you need to or not.
Right. All right, man. Hopefully I'll talk to you tomorrow. If not, we'll convene another time.
All right, sounds good, John. You take care, and you have a good evening. Again, thanks for a great conversation. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. The pleasure's mine.
Bye now. Our buddy John from Central PA. Thank you very kindly to Matt in San Francisco. Matt with a note. Just subject line, bless you. Bob, I agree 2,000% with the Clinton-Sanders ticket. When she named Kane, I knew we were done. And I hate that knowing you're done feeling, because I had that feeling back when Al Gore, for reasons that surpass anything resembling reason or common sense, named Holy Joe Lieberman as his running mate. I looked up and went, well, fucked. And we were. And you hate that feeling. You know, the myth of Cassandra cursed by, you know, she wouldn't get it on with Apollo. So Apollo cursed her with the gift of prophecy in that she would always be right, but no one would believe her. That feeling blows. And you do, you know, that feeling of, oh, we're screwed. How about that? Thank you, Matt. Thank you very kindly. That takes us down to 290. We cracked that barrier down from over $400. So that's doing something. We're down to 290. We got 6 minutes to go. Thank you to everybody who's done that. I hope I've named everybody along the way. if we could take it down, anything that cuts into the likelihood of needing a Friday on the front porch miracle is huge. 5, 10, whatever. It is what it is. And I'm not kidding when I say that there are bills to pay. Okay. Keith says, Bob, can Trump postpone or cancel the elections in 2020? I heard that he was going to on the daytime shows. That would be extremely difficult to do. I mean, Jesus, we held elections during the War of 1812, okay? We had elections when Washington was on fire. We had elections before and during the Second World War. Okay, there were... we had a presidential election with the Southern Insurrectionist Army scant miles from Washington, D.C. So, no, Keith, I would be skeptical of that because, among other things, that sad, savagely mentally ill individual in the White House wants the election in 2020 because he thinks he'll win, and I think he's got a pretty good chance of it. So, just, you know, bear that in mind. What else? Is there anything we can do in, like, 2 or 3 minutes? I don't know if you heard this, but just in line with some of the things we've been saying, back before they held a vigil for the victims of Charlottesville, hours before that, with hundreds of people coming in, police entirely almost by accident found that Elijah B. Blankenship, age 26, was in possession of explosives, a pipe bomb, and carrying concealed weapons. This from News 5 Cleveland. Police said he was sitting in his car acting suspiciously, confronted by an officer, and he said he had a knife in his waistband. Then they found a bag with black powder, gunpowder, a pipe bomb, and what appeared to be homemade fireworks. That's when they called the bomb squad. They asked Elijah Blankenship where the stuff came from. He said, the bag is my friend's. And no, it's not a pipe bomb. That's a homemade firework. According to News 5 Cleveland, Elijah B. Blankenship is a known meth user, has a rap sheet for drug charges, and has a couple of cases that are still in the works in Summit County, Ohio court. This was a vigil in Ohio for what happened in Charlottesville. And one last thing. You remember a while back we talked. Remember when the West Virginia, the young woman from West Virginia, was raped at a party in Steubenville, Ohio. Well, one of the two kids who was actually convicted in the rape, and you might remember if you've been around that long, you might remember the clip where the CNN correspondent was worrying and weeping about whatever will happen to the poor children who are convicted of rape as juveniles. One of those children's dad decided to try to blow away a judge. Nathaniel Richmond, father of Malik Richmond, tried to kill a local judge. It's getting hot out there, folks. I'm getting too damn hot. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for taking the fundraising down to 290. Hopefully the overnight crew will take it down a little bit more. And we won't have to have too brutal of a Friday on the front porch miracle, because as it stands, it's it goes up to 490 tomorrow. And for all I know, never mind. Have a great night, everybody. Thanks for your mad moderating skills, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Friend them up if you use those social media platforms, please. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.